Here's Andy Udman.
Our brains are at the forefront of medicine. Science is learning so much every day about things that you can do in your everyday life to improve your brain health. Your brain is made of food, and that's why meal choices are so increasingly linked to depression.
It is war, folks. We have a war going on between folks who want their poison food and their poison drinks, which is killing their bodies and their minds. And the war is with good people wanting us all to be healthier. It is the last day of May. My name is Andy Udman, author and nutritional consultant. Pam Colleen is in studio this morning. And Pam, I'm going to do something a little differently as soon as our producer gets your mic on, because I want you to be part of this. I have a little gift for you. Ooh. Because, you know, we have to celebrate the victories, because there are victories in our war to make people healthier. And this one, Pam, is from New York City. And before we get to our special guest today talking about how food affects your brain, you have led a war against what you think is probably the number one enemy when it comes to good health, and that's sugar.
Mm-hmm.
From New York City, this newsflash, the mayor of New York City is going to war with Pam Colleen against obesity and the prime culprit causing it, sugar. Listen to the very latest this morning.
Big sugar-packed drinks might become illegal in New York City, but not without some controversy.
Well, I don't think it's the mayor's job to decide what sort of soft drinks that people in Manhattan or anywhere in the world want to buy, for that matter.
The city's mayor, Michael Bloomberg, is pushing for a ban on sodas larger than 16 ounces as part of his anti-obesity campaign. Sales would reportedly be outlawed in places such as movie theaters and restaurants. The proposal cited statistics showing more than half of New York adults are overweight.
Hey, we haven't won the war, but it's one small step.
It's one small step, yeah.
It's symbolic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to be tough to get rid of these foods entirely, but people need to know when they're making those choices. It's just not a wise choice.
How big of a factor is sugar in the fact that over half of New Yorkers and the rest of us are overweight?
It's a huge factor. It's one of the main factors in contributing to disease today in general. And if you look at our increased consumption of sugar, of course, back in the 1700s, we only consumed about 4 pounds of sugar per year. Today, we're eating about 150 pounds of sugar per year. I mean, it's just craziness that we would think that we could increase our consumption of sugar and not have problems.
150 pounds of sugar we're consuming now?
I took
some topsoil to the backyard yesterday. I think they're 20-pound bags. I'm trying to picture 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 of those bags of sugar
per year per person. Yes, yes.
And
for some people, it's probably a lot more, because that's just an average number. So,
and we wonder why we have health issues now.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a segue.
Mm-hmm.
We think it affects just our waistline. You have a fascinating author lined up this morning. I'm holding his book, The Happiness Diet. I want to read the first paragraph of the foreword. Very short, but very powerful. For the first time in history, writes Dr. Drew Ramsey, it's too much food is making us sick. For the first time in history, too much food is making us sick. It's all too apparent that the modern American diet is expanding our waistline. Here comes the key line. What's less obvious is that it is starving and shrinking our brains.
That's right, because these foods, these processed foods, if we're just speaking generically here, basically have done two things. Number one, they have displaced more nutrient-dense animal foods in our diet, and at the same time, they are causing hormonal chaos in our bodies.
You can't eat Kraft foods all the way through college and pass?
No. I can't see. You can't be very happy. Let's just put it that way.
Your brain. What is your brain saying if you're just eating Kraft foods all the time?
Oh, you know, you're going to starve your brain. You're going to create a lot of problems with your mood, attention, concentration. All these things are going to be compromised if you're displacing more nutrient-dense foods that actually support your brain.
His name is Drew Ramsey. He's a psychiatrist, and he joins us this morning. Dr. Ramsey, thanks for joining us.
Andy, Pam, nice to be joining you guys.
Good morning.
Let me read another paragraph from Dr. Ramsey's book. On the front of his book, by the way, is a picture of a hamburger, and the title is The Happiness Burger.
happiness diet.
The happiness diet.
But it is
diet.
A happy burger.
Yeah, it is a happy burger. And let me explain that. He writes inside, let's take a closer look at the cheeseburger on the cover of this book. Too many nutritionists. This is a snapshot of everything that is wrong with the American diet. It's fatty. It's full of cholesterol and high in calories. In the happiness diet, though, our burger is an important source for much of what you and your brain need for healthy growth and high functioning. The reason is that this is not your typical fast food burger. The cheese and meat both come from grass-fed cows, ensuring you will get a good supply of brain-healthy omega-3s and other nutrients not found in the factory-farmed animals. Dr. Ramsey, take us through the rest of the burger. Why is this burger on the front of your book, which looks so enticing, not the greasy recipe for death, which some people seem to think it is, but actually will make you happy and healthier?
The reason there's a cheeseburger on the book is just to put in the spotlight how we've changed our thoughts about food. It's a better quality, and it's a different quality of meat. There's a different mix of fats in the beef and in the cheese. The vegetables on there are organic, so you don't have to worry about getting things like pesticides that are bad for the brain. You also get more nutrients. We know that organically grown vegetables, tomatoes specifically, have more of two key brain-protecting nutrients, quercetin and lycopene, and you get a whole grain bun. So it's not that I think people should eat a hamburger every day. It's that it's an attempt to have people examine their notions about nutrition and to understand that a hamburger, as Pam is saying, is a very nutrient dense. People think about it as just high calorie. But if you just look at the beef in that burger, you're talking about maybe a couple hundred calories max. That what adds on and piles on the calories to a lot of these foods are the added sugars and added fats. So those are some of the reasons that is a healthier option. And I think I wanted to show people a hamburger can be a part of a healthy, happy diet.
Now take us to the bun, if you would.
The bun led to a lot of controversy in the sense that... As Pam was talking about a sugar, one of the reasons that it's hard to peg an exact number is that refined carbohydrates, the typical fast food bun, refined carbohydrates are made of glucose, which is sugar. And so if you actually look at what spikes blood sugar, white bread actually spikes blood sugar faster than a packet of table sugar. And so refined carbohydrates are something that is very important people understand. That is one of the main factors that is driving our weight gain. Not just that we eat more calories, but the types of calories that we started consuming. And that if you go to a whole grain source, a bun isn't going to be the healthiest thing in the world, but a whole grain bun is going to have more complex carbohydrates. It's also going to have more of the nutrients that get stripped away. Things that don't end up in fortified flour. We have to fortify our flour because the nutrients that are in whole wheat flour get stripped out, but some, like magnesium, it's very important for brain functioning, don't get added back in.
Now let's talk about the ingredients that are in the red meat, because red meat has had a bad rap for many, many years now. It's been wrongly demonized. It's a health food. When I see people increase their consumption of red meat, especially when it's from grass-fed cows, they always come back to me and tell me they have more energy, that they basically just feel better. So to me, it's this decline in our consumption of red meat over the last several decades that has contributed to a lot of ill health, and we need to return to this traditional food. So what is it in the red meat that I see in people when they come back to me and say that they have more energy? What are the components of red meat that are healthy?
The components of red meat that I like to highlight are the type of iron, heme iron, which it's not only more observable, but it's this nutritional twofer. It also increases the absorption of non-heme iron, which is another form of iron that you get in plants. And both are important sources of iron, but I like those nutritional synergies where something increases the absorption of something else. You get a fat called conjugated linoleic acid, which is a very special fat made by ruminant animals, so sheep, goats, and cows. And you get about 500% more in both cheese and in beef, and this is a fat that's very interesting. The National Academy of Sciences has declared it a fat that's an anti-carcinogen. It looks like it also helps fight visceral fat or belly fat. And there's even a little bit of data from the bench that it helps protect brain cells. You get some of these omega-3 fats. It's not a huge dose, but I'm a big fan of trying to get some omega-3s in your diet every single day. And then there are the long-chained omega-3 fats. Everybody's heard about these for heart health. But your brain, the main polyunsaturated fat in your brain is DHA, a long-chain omega-3 fat that's actually, it's pretty hard to find in dietary sources. You get some of that in grass-fed beef. You're going to get a complete protein, which always helps people feel better. You're going to get full. I find a lot of people who I work with who are you know, quote-unquote, dieting, they struggle with a lot of irritability and a lot of mood swings because they're hungry all the time. And I'm a big proponent of the way to lose weight is to eat real food.
Doctor, let me just jump in. I'm looking at the picture of this burger. And we have, by the way, Pam, and you know this, here in London, Ontario, we suddenly have all these burger chains. Mm-hmm. Burgers have suddenly become hot. We've got The Works.
Mm-hmm.
They serve up burgers like it's a sirloin steak. We were at Union Burger the other day. I've got all kinds of coupons. Doctor, you've got a picture of the happiness diet as the title of your book, and then you got the picture of this big burger. Are all these burger chains which are suddenly appearing, is this a good thing for our health or not?
I don't think it's the best thing for our health. I mean, those are popping up in New York City. There are all these, and I like the the marketing appeal. I like the idea that people are promoting grass-fed beef, which I think is very important. I do think that we consume, on average, way too much meat in general. And the problem is there's been a polarization that people are either going to have a burger all the time or they're never going to have a burger. I really enjoy my burgers. I eat them without guilt, but I don't eat them every day. And there has been a lot of science that's come out that's concerning about red meat. I mean, it's not that it was interesting about a month ago, two studies came out, one from a very respected Australian group saying that women who eat red meat have a lower risk of depression. And then the following week, Walter Willett's group at Harvard came out with a large study looking at red meat consumption saying that basically at any level, red meat does increase your risk of death. And I think that's really confusing for eaters and for those of us who are doling out eating advice.
Okay. What I find fascinating is that you as a psychiatrist are focusing in on brain food. So, I mean, I ingest, asked Pam, can you get through college eating Kraft Foods? Is there a link? We have to take a short break, doctor, but when we come back, I want to ask you, if you eat better, do you tend to be smarter? And if you say yes, let's follow the logic. Pam has even suggested that one of the most effective ways to deal with crime is to feed the inmates good food so their brain works. I want to ask you if that's a stretch when we come back in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. 10:24 now, Andy Udman and Pam Colleen in conversation with the author of a book called The Happiness Diet. Dr. Drew Ramsey is a psychiatrist, and that's why we're focusing today on the link between nutritional food and your brain. And two statements, doctor, if I could get you to comment on. One is only five words long, page 86 of your book. Fat is not the enemy. What do you mean by that?
Your brain's mainly made of fat, so and it's mainly made of specialized fats that come from the diet. So people have gotten on an anti-fat, have gotten an anti-fat message starting in the late 1970s. And as we learn more about nutrition, we have to understand nutrition is a reasonably new field. This year celebrates the 100th anniversary of actually discovering the first vitamin. So as we learn more, and as people have, there's been a very clear message that people should cut fat out of their diet, we've gotten much more sick, we've eaten more calories, we've gotten more obese, more diabetic, we've had more depression. This isn't an effective way to tackle the healthcare problems that we're having. And fat isn't the enemy because not all fats are created equal. I mean, we have, fats are a complex set of molecules, and understanding their function in the body, I think, actually really helps people see things. For example, I was speaking to a patient the other day, and I mentioned an avocado, and she said, well, that's a fatty food. I'm not going to eat that. Now, an avocado is nothing but a brain food. All the fats in there are really great for your brain, And it just sort of struck me that that's how far the message has gotten, that a whole real food has gotten demonized because it's, you know, quote unquote, too fat.
Doctor, let me share with you something I said at my when I did the eulogy for my father when he died a few years ago. He loved his pork, and he loved the fat on the side of pork. And we always said, we somehow had the feeling this wasn't good for him. But he loved it. Oh, he just loved it. And he loved speck, the Dutch word for fat. And I said at his funeral, Dad, we told you that speck was going to kill you. Just think, you died at 95, but if you hadn't eaten the speck, just think, you'd be 120. You're saying fat isn't what kills.
I don't think fat's what kills. Saturated fats change cholesterol profile. And cholesterol profile has been linked to heart disease, diabetes, I mean, life expectancy, and there are some good linkages there. But I don't think we fully understand cholesterol processing in the body in a way that allows these sort of blanket statements. For example, if fat's bad, then why is it that people who have more of this fat DHA we've spoken about, when people have more of those in their bloodstream, they get less dementia? And their brain stays looks healthier on imaging scans as they get older. If fat is all bad, why are the omega-3 fats so clearly linked to heart health?
I think the problem may be we should have another word for fat, because when people hear fat, they think of a rotund waistline.
Well, people believe that fat makes us fat. It is not fat that has made us fat. It's carbohydrates that drive insulin and insulin that drives fat.
If people just understood that six-second statement, we'd be so much further ahead.
Mm-hmm.
We would be, and I think it would allow people to make much better choices. I mean, I see this all the time where people are constantly seeking out fake processed foods because they have health claims like being low-fat, having no cholesterol. I love it when I see a food that doesn't have any cholesterol in it anyway, being advertised as having no cholesterol. You know, something like an apple. I mean, you know, only animal products have cholesterol.
Low cholesterol apples on sale now.
Right, and it's where I think we've gotten again. We've oversimplified a message about cholesterol. Cholesterol, for example, is the basis of your sex hormones, of vitamin D. The largest deposit of cholesterol in your body is in your brain. And we've tried to make a very simple message, or health officials have, that the cholesterol is bad, fat is bad, and the evidence for that isn't entirely clear. Even saturated fats. If you take saturated fats, you'd think if you collected all the scientific studies about saturated fats and put them together, you'd get a really clear conclusion that saturated fat's bad for your heart. The most recent meta-analysis that looked at, I think, 44 different studies, couldn't find a signal that saturated fats were actually bad for heart health.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, the kind of thing where people have gotten really kind of frustrated and confused with getting, this study says this and this study says that, and getting different information. And that's where I think the happiness diet is hopefully a relief to a lot of people. I hear this from a lot of readers, that there isn't a gimmick, there isn't a superfood. This is saying, here are the reasons that whole, real foods, including animal foods, are going to help you lose weight, and are going to help you feel your best.
Okay, I just discovered a nugget in what you just said, because you called your book The Happiness Diet. You just said, if I understood you correctly, that if you eat fat, you'll have a better sex life. Did you say that?
I think there's good evidence for that. I've seen a lot of people who don't eat any fat intentionally, and they have low libidos. It's an interesting clinical observation. I'm not sure that there's great science behind that, but what I did say is that cholesterol is the basis of sex hormones. Now, you also make cholesterol. I mean, the argument of people who support things like a vegan diet, they like to point out that your body makes a lot of cholesterol, your body makes these omega-3 fats.
Doctor, we have to take a short break for a news update. When we come back, you do have a sense of humor, so I want to ask you this question. Vegetarians live to be 100, or does it just seem like it? We'll be back with the good doctor, the author of The Happiness Diet, in just a moment. Really suggesting there's a strong link between what you eat and your brain's ability to function. Very, very important stuff. We'll be back with the doctor in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Andy Udman along with Pam Colleen. I love this. Page 129 of the book, The Happiness Diet. This explains a lot, Pam. Big tobacco owns many of America's most popular processed food brands, like Nabisco and Kraft.
Yeah, and can we trust Big Tobacco?
Oh, of course. Oh, no, maybe we can't trust Big Tobacco. We're in conversation with the author, Dr. Drew Ramsey, talking about the link between good nutrition and the way your brain works. Doctor, talk to us about your list of the top 100 reasons to avoid processed foods.
Well, there are at least 100 reasons. There's even more. I thought it would be really helpful to show people the problems with processed food. Everybody, you know, we've been hearing the same message for a long time. Stop eating sugar. Start eating more vegetables. I think these reasons provide people some fuel. Things like, you know, add artificial raspberry flavoring comes from beaver anal glands. I just think that helps you when you're looking at that, you know, raspberry flavored, you know, low fat muffin in the morning, to understand where these foods come from. They don't come from the places that we have eaten, where we've gotten our nutrition for, you know, since the beginning of our existence. And I wanted to answer, you asked two questions right before break, and I just wanted to let your listeners know. The first one was, what's the science? And the science has gotten very clear over the last maybe 3 years. Five major studies have come out linking nutritional dietary patterns, what you eat, with your risk of getting depressed or having an anxiety disorder. It's a very powerful finding in adolescents. The kids with the lowest diet quality had a huge increase in the number of mental health disorders that they had. It happens, you see it in women, you see it in men, and the dietary patterns that are linked with better mental health are all based on whole foods. They're things like the Mediterranean diet, the diets that have a lot of vegetables, have a lot of beans, have a lot of fish, have a lot of olive oil, and have meat in them. And I want to tell your listeners that because there are so many claims getting made about food these days that aren't backed in science. And that was a very exciting thing that happened as I was researching the Happiness Diet, was this data started coming out, and coming out quite clearly, to the point where the first time ever the American Journal of Psychiatry dedicated an issue to food. There's a lot of new science. The second question you asked was about a vegetarian diet. The great thing about a vegetarian diet is people start eating more vegetables. that is always going to be health protective. But cutting out all meat sources, taking vegetarianism to extreme ends, and eating a vegan diet where you have no animal products, that obligates you to take dietary supplements. And there are some, you know, interesting, I think, moral arguments or ethical arguments for not eating animals. But I'm a physician. I treat people for health problems, and I have to say that if you eat a vegan diet and you don't take supplements, and I don't recommend that people take supplements for dietary nutritional needs, a vegan diet over time shrinks the brain. It's just very clear. You only get B12 from animal sources. You only get the long-chain omega-3 fatty acids in concentrated sources from animal products.
And a lot of vegans aren't being told as well that the history of a vegan diet started by basically trying to kill people's sex lives, to destroy their libidos. That's the history of a vegan diet.
And then also the vegan diet is a very new diet. It's not, if you look, you know, it's a diet that really has emerged in the last 40 or 50 years. And again, it's where we've gotten polarized. There are some great, you know, what I love about the vegans is they pay really close attention to their food, where their food comes from, the environmental impacts of their food. They you know, take a lot of care in shopping and preparing their food. This is all great and should be an example for all of us. But you shouldn't cut out all animal products. I think that's a real mistake nutritionally. It's really bad for the brain.
Doctor, I wonder if we can focus for just a moment on this huge, huge, huge issue growing by the day, depression. How does that fit in to your book, The Happiness Diet? What is causing this tsunami of depression?
Right. Now depression is the about to be the top cause of disability in the world. 12% of Americans take antidepressants. When I saw London, I started researching in the UK, in London, England, the use of antidepressants has increased 25% in the last 3 years, across the pond. Depression, people need to understand, is a brain disorder. And that surprises people often, that people will still think that depression is, you know, a flaw in character. And good moods, feeling your best, comes from having a healthy brain. And healthy brain, your brain, as I said, is made of food and specific nutrients that you need to get in your diet. And so depression is a very dangerous and disabling disease. I mean, it's very, I treat depression every day. And food plays an important part in people's risk of getting depressed, and I find clinically plays a very important part in people's recovery. And you just think about it; it just makes common sense. You know, if someone is seriously depressed, and they don't have a Prozac deficiency, although Prozac might be very helpful to them, and medications probably are not going to work as well if you're treating someone who actually has a nutrient depleted brain.
Let me throw a name into it, just to put a face on this issue of depression: Whitney Houston.
Right. There are countless celebrities who I think highlight this. I mean, Miss Houston, you know, I don't know the details of her psychiatric history, but she certainly suffered from substance use and substance abuse, which almost always runs with, depression. I don't know a lot about Whitney's diet, but I would bet that she often, you know, did not choose the most nutrient dense meals.
Let me pounce on something profound that you just said. Depression is not a reflection of a lack of Prozac. I love that. What is it a lack of?
Well, you know, this is where I think people get a little unjustly frustrated with psychiatry. I mean, we know more about the brain now than we have ever known, but there's a real anti-psychiatry movement that is afoot, that wants to pounce on whatever mistakes we make or whatever we don't know. What causes depression is still not 100% clear. There is a lot of emerging evidence. I think what we're going to learn over the next 5 or 10 years is that depression comes from multiple sources. You can get significantly depressed by, for example, not having enough folate in your diet. We know that patients who present with depression, the largest study shows about 53% of them were folate deficient. Now that's just, if for some of those people at least, you replace their folate, which is going to be found in leafy greens and lentils,
And liver, organ meats are very high.
Very, very the highest sources in liver and organ meats. And very good point. You know, some of those people, maybe not all of them, are going to feel better. We also know that depression. You know, there are a few genetic mutations that are coming very clear. The methyl tetrahydrofolate reductase gene has come into our spotlight as something that even if you eat enough folate, your chemistry might not process that in a way. And folate's important because you make feel-good neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine and norepinephrine.
Just to round out this segment on depression, Doctor, you quoted some figures on the growth of depression. And Pam, you said that depression is...
By 2020, depression is going to be the second leading cause of disease worldwide. Right now it's sitting at number 4.
What are the implications for our society, Doctor, on what Pam just said?
The implications is we're not going to do our best. When you don't have a brain that is functioning, you know, at its best, we're gonna. And if you think about how, you know, depression just doesn't affect your individual. Anybody who is married to someone who struggles with depression knows how difficult that is. Anybody who's had a mom who's been, you know, struggled with clinical depression, you know, depression has a ripple effect. I mean, the most recent study said that at Harvard said that 50% of us will struggle with a mental disorder at some time during our lives. And I think the implications for our society is we need to do a better job understanding that these are medical conditions. We need to do a better job encouraging people to get treatment. Something like 50 to 80% of people with significant depression don't seek treatment. And a lot of times they don't seek treatment because they think that all psychiatrists do is prescribe pills. And I want everyone to hear very loud and clear, we have a lot of effective treatments for depression. Certainly, we have medications. We also have a number of talk therapies that have great evidence behind them. I think nutritional interventions are gaining evidence. We have a number of herbs, like St. John's wort, which have great evidence. There's a lot. I rarely run into somebody with severe depression that I can't get better or I can't help get better.
Wonderful. Doctor, we do have to take a short break. I want to ask you this when we come back. I want to make a crude analogy. What you're saying is you have to feed your brain for it to work. You have to feed it the right stuff. Your car, you put gas in it. If you were short of gas, say, for example, you put orange juice in your car, or you put water, or you put antifreeze in your gas tank, your motor isn't going to perform. When we come back, I want to ask you, what should you put in your brain tank so your brain works well? What are the foods, what are the nutrients that your brain craves? And please tell me they're all in Kraft Dinners. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Pam, every time we have one of your wonderful guests on, I always get barraged with phone calls and emails, questions. And I always want to leave our listeners with a takeaway. What do they take away? You've been telling me all along that there was a period before roughly World War II where we were healthier than we are today. But after that period, we've developed a phobia of all the good stuff. We have a phobia of fat. We have a phobia of butter. We have a phobia of meat. We have a phobia of eggs, liver, cholesterol. Our diet is dictated by phobia. So the question that I want to ask our guest this morning, Dr. Drew Ramsey, the author of The Happiness Diet, forget about the body. If you want to keep your mind healthy, what should we be putting into the gas tank of our brains to keep it healthy, Doctor?
Great question, and what I like to talk most about, which is, you know, we can spend a lot of time talking about what not to do, but what people really, I think, want to hear is what to do. And so in the happiness diet, we grouped foods that are particularly good for mood, particularly good for energy, and particularly good for focus, because those are the three areas of brain function that it seems clear in the data and that I believe clinically can help people. The key steps to the happiness diet is to first do a quick inventory. Look in your cupboard. And if you're seeing a lot of things with a lot of ingredients, I want you to get rid of those. And the things that we want to replace them, when you look at your plate on the happiness diet, last night I had hot dogs, which is not something that people think is particularly healthy. But the hot dog was the smallest thing on my plate. I had a big mound of quickly sautéed kale and onions. I had a poblano pepper that I'd grilled. And the hot dog was a grass-fed hot dog. It was a small part of the plate. And that mainly we want people eating, it's a plant-based diet, a lot of colorful plants, minimally processed, minimally cooked. We want people to switch over to the types of meats that Pam is talking about, grass-fed beef, grass-fed dairy. That's an easy thing to do. I'm sure you have an equivalent, but in the U.S. we have a, there's several places actually on my website for, I've got a find food section, which I encourage people to get to know a farmer, get to know a dairy farmer, get to know a meat farmer. There are two people I get almost all my meat from. One lives in Indiana near my farm there, and one lives in upstate New York. And I think it's great to support the local agriculture, but you also know that you're getting a better meat and a better dairy. I think people should cut out all processed foods for a variety of reasons. Those 100 reasons, we give you in the book for just the beginning, but you want to get rid of, you know, all kinds of things, ranging from the types of toxins we talked about, pesticides, insecticides, those types of things, but also stuff from food packaging like bisphenol A, which leaks into food. And again, I think people get confused. They hear a lot of headlines here and there, this is good for you or bad for you, but at the end of the day, BPA is a molecule that in rat models inhibits brain cells growing. That's not something I want to feed my daughter, who I'm doing my best to feed her foods to grow a healthy, happy brain. You're going to avoid those things if you get on the happiness diet.
Doctor, we have just 1 minute left. I wonder if in that moment you can take a snapshot of our society today in terms of our physical and mental health. Where are we and where are we going if we don't improve?
All right. We are, I think everybody knows, we're overweight, we have a lot of depression, we have a huge surge, a tsunami, as you call it, of mental health disorders. Where we need to go is people engaging with their food. The great news on the happiness diet is you have a lot of control over how you feel, and you make choices three times a day. It is not hard, and it's very delicious to make better choices. So do things like eat eggs for breakfast, but make them farm-fresh eggs. I think with those choices, people are going to lose weight. We've had people lose up to 25 pounds in 6 weeks on the happiness diet. People are going to feel more energetic, healthier, happier. They're going to have what I call the brain food effect, meaning that you know you're feeding your brain, and so you just feel a little bit better.
You're an exceptional doctor, Dr. Ramsey. On your website, you have instructional videos showing people how to buy their food, how to prepare their food. You are a true physician.
Thank you, Pam. I do want to, there's lots of information on the website, and I try and always have there be a good take-home, and I want people to know I don't have any affiliation. The only person who pays me are my patients. I'm not funded by the beef industry or by a supplement or by the pharmaceutical industry. I'm interested, you know, I'm a country boy at heart. I'm interested in taking good care of people and having them feed their brains with real food. There's lots of information on my website, drewramseymd.com. And I encourage anybody to write in. If you have questions, I try and get back to all readers as quickly as I can about anything that you're struggling with where you think food could help. And the other rule, I'm so sorry, to put it in the end, is to eat a larger variety of seafood. It's the last day of May. I have a brain food every month. My brain food for the last month has been mussels. Because mussels are so inexpensive, they're so delicious, they're so easy to prepare, and they help us fight this myth that eating well costs too much money, takes too much time. I just posted a video on Mussels Diablo, which is an amazing recipe for the brain. And I really appreciate you guys highlighting this important issue because people really should feel empowered. You can change your food and you can change your mood. You can eat to build a better brain. And people should invest a little bit of time and some energy into doing that. And I think they'll see great results.
I wish you could hear the applause that we're hearing from all over London this morning, Doctor. It's been awesome. The last word goes to Pam.
I'll just encourage everybody to get his book. It's The Happiness Diet, Dr. Drew Ramsey, and it's your website again is drewramseymd.com. And I think it's a valuable resource. There's no question about it. I'd love to see the patients hand this book over to their doctors and get them to be more proactive, like you are, Dr. Ramsey, in terms of educating their patients and showing them about these nutrients. Dense foods.
Doctor, a 10-second comment on that little nugget from your book. Big Tobacco owns many of America's most popular processed food brands like Nabisco and Kraft.
Big Food is interested in what all big companies are interested in, which is making profit. And health and the implications of the food they put out there, you know, isn't it as clear or isn't at the forefront of their mission statements? And again, I think that people should... you know, just like you don't trust Big Tobacco to give you good information, look to science, look to nutrition and to medicine to help guide you, but mainly look to Mother Nature. If Mother Nature didn't make it, I don't eat it.
There we go. Terrific. Doctor, thank you so much. Pam, anything
perfect.
Else you want to throw in?
That was a perfect last line.
Absolutely.
Yes. No, I just am really grateful that this doctor has come forward and has done this work.
We've talked so much about healthy bodies, but this was about a healthy mind. So important. 11 o'clock news coming up in just